This is the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour. I'm Ross Chambliss. Erica Payne is a political strategist, public policy consultant, and commentator. She is the founder and president of the Agenda Project, a public policy education and advocacy organization that works to identify and exploit political and social issues that benefit progressive causes. Her organization has worked to effect a public rejection of conservative Republican ideas in Congress by creating provocative and sometimes graphic political ads in order to get news media to change the direction of the debate. Erica Payne is also chief strategist for Patriotic Millionaires, a group of wealthy Americans who support higher taxes on the rich and raising the minimum wage. Payne is the author of The Practical Progressive, How to Build a 21st Century Political Movement. She spoke at the Hinckley Institute earlier this month on December 2nd, 2015.
So let me tell you a little bit about the Agenda Project, which is what I want to talk to you about today. So the Agenda Project is an organization that I started 5 years ago. And let me tell you why I started it. I had spent the early part of my career in traditional electoral politics and then went to business school, worked in the private sector in marketing for a couple of years, and then came back into politics. And I started working in politics, working with a bunch of organizations and institutions like think tanks and legal advocacy groups and that kind of stuff. People who undergird this electoral process. So every time you vote, you're voting for a person, but a lot of times the policies that they come up with, the economic theories and legal theories underneath those policies are developed in academic centers and think tanks and legal advocacy groups and that kind of thing. So there's, you know, those pictures you see with an iceberg and the water lines here, and you see the top part of the iceberg, but then when you can see below the water line, there's this whole bigger iceberg underneath it. The American political system is a lot like that. There's a lot that happens in politics that that is connected to, but not so publicly obvious as the electoral process where people go in and vote for an individual. And so when I came back into politics about 10 or so years ago, I started working with a lot of these institutions that were working on economic issues and working on legal issues and voting issues and things like that. One of those experiences was with the Roosevelt Institute. So do y'all remember when the financial system collapsed, however many years ago, 6 years ago? So I was working on a project with the Roosevelt Institute about how to reform the financial system in Wall Street so that we didn't have this problem again. During the 18-month period that I was working on Wall Street reform with a lot of people that you might have heard of, Elizabeth Warren, who's now a senator, wrote a chapter for a volume that I edited, and George Soros, who is a big financier, was engaged in the project. So a bunch of really top-level people obviously came together. Our country had just suffered this enormous structural challenge. And so in that process, we developed a volume about how to address Wall Street, some specific reforms. Well, during that 18-month period that I was working on that project, the pro-reform cadre of people were able to raise and spend maybe $2 or $3 million advocating for effective reform. Now, during the exact same 18-month period, who can guess how much the bank spent on lobbyists? $600 million. So you got $2 or $3 million over here and $600 million over here. So I looked at this and I thought, well, my goodness, you know, if this is the case across a bunch of different industries in a bunch of different ways, then how in the world can you ever expect to have good public policy, you know, that is oriented around keeping the American people safe and economically stable and all that when you've got these forces who have $600 million? And as somebody said to me, you know, and that's just how much they needed to spend to accomplish what they wanted to accomplish. There was lots more money at their disposal. So about 6 years ago, I thought, if I want to work in politics, but I can't raise $600 million, how can I work in politics in a way that's effective? And so what I did was I formed an organization called the Agenda Project. And the goal of the Agenda Project is to consistently get $200 or $300 of return for every dollar that we spend. And we want to get those returns in communications power. So our goal, we believe that most Americans just want a decent society that takes care of old people, helps people reach their potential, provides some basic economic security, These are not controversial things, but somehow they do get lost in the lawmaking and the political process. So we thought, how can we put together a mechanism, an organization that can consistently have a really, really loud megaphone without spending $600 million? So we created what operates in essence like a public relations firm. And I'm sure y'all are familiar with how PR firms work. What they're trying to do is to influence the news. And so what we try to do is influence the news. There are a lot of different ways that you can influence the news. You know, a thing can happen. You know, a building is built, a protest happens, et cetera. That can make news. Another way to make news is to have a group of people say something about an event that happened, and depending on who the people are, that can make news. You know, there are lots of ways to affect the media cycle. So what we tried to do is create a mechanism that could consistently affect the media cycle and blow up some of the ideas and values that we have to give them more prominence in the American political system, because if there's one thing politicians listen to, it's what's going on in the news, how am I portrayed in the news, what's, you know, finger in the wind, how's the American mood changing, and how do I need to react politically to that? So we thought if we can influence the news, we can put our values into the news more effectively, then potentially over time we can change the American political system. So I'm going to show you some videos and times when we've been able to do that effectively. And then we can talk some, and feel free to raise your hand if you have any questions during any of this. So I'm going to show you one of our fun examples. This was one of our first out of the gate examples. Now, who knows who Paul Ryan is? Okay, so Paul Ryan, current Speaker of the House. What did Paul Ryan do 4 years ago that was controversial? Does anybody remember? So Paul Ryan put out a budget, and in that budget, he did a lot of cuts to Medicare, which is a really critical, obviously, the healthcare provider for so many of our seniors. His budget had included a lot of cuts to Medicare and a fundamental reshaping of that program. We were really disturbed by that. But in the media cycle at the time, all anybody could say was Paul Ryan's plan is bold, bold, bold. You might not agree with it, but it's bold, bold, bold. And that was all that was in the media cycle. So any groups who thought this budget wasn't the best thing for American seniors were having trouble getting into the news, getting into the news cycle to tell their side of the story that this wasn't the best thing for American seniors. So we cut an ad, and I'm going to show you that ad. You notice the America the Beautiful song in the background.
A note to listeners, this political ad shows a guy in a suit who looks remarkably like Paul Ryan pushing an old woman in a wheelchair off a cliff. If you care to see this ad, you can find a link to it on our website, kcpw.org.
Okay, so that's the ad, all right? We put it out with a very scathing press release about what we thought of Paul Ryan's plans. And let's see what happened.
So let's just stipulate that nobody's trying to throw Grandma off the cliff.
No senior believes they're being thrown off a cliff.
Grandma gets thrown off the cliff.
They throw the old lady off the cliff.
No, Grandma off the cliff.
Now we're throwing Granny off the cliff.
You run 30-second ads and say, yep, Paul Ryan wants to push senior
Medicare
citizens, yep, over the cliff.
I know the Democrats are going to be showing videos of old people being thrown off cliffs.
And the truth is that there's not Granny going off the side of the cliff.
Ryan pushing an old lady in a wheelchair off a cliff.
One literally throws Grandma and the kids over the cliff.
This is like crack cocaine for Democrats.
Okay. So that was kind of fun. So can you, will you pull up the one I'll show you? Pull the debate up. And so that we put that out in 2010 when he first released, I think it was 2010 when he first released his budget. That you saw the reaction. And so people really, you know, he had defended, and I think anytime you have the other side stipulating that they are not in fact trying to throw a grandmother off a cliff, you're in the realm of winning a debate. You know, getting your opponent into a defensive crouch, maybe it's not in all the way win, but it's getting close to it. And so when Paul Ryan then became the nominee, the vice presidential nominee, we slightly recut the ad, put it out again. When he released his budget a year or two, his next budget a year or two later, recut the ad a little bit, put it out again. When Paul Ryan then released a book about a year ago, you know, he released his book about his plans for America. He has the front cover of the book has him doing a low high five in the front. You see him. Well, we looked at that book cover and thought, isn't that handy that that's what his book cover looks like? We photoshopped in a grandmother in a wheelchair. We partnered with a bunch of organizations on the ground to create mock-up posters of what we thought was Paul Ryan's, you know, the more appropriate book cover. So in about 15 cities around the country, at every book party that Paul Ryan was at, there are signs of people with our version of his book cover. We took copies of his book and made full book covers and hand-delivered them to about 30 of the leading media outlets in the country and wrote in there, you know, please help me, love Granny. You know, so we did all of these little stunts to keep this Granny off the cliff in the American zeitgeist and connected to Paul Ryan. We drove it every day that we could in the media cycle over the course of several years, so we didn't just, you know, pop something out one time and then let it die. We wanted to build on that theme. We wanted to drive home the point that we thought America was more beautiful with Medicare and that Paul Ryan was standing in the way of us having a country that respects its elders and cares for them in their old age. And so over 4 years, we managed to drive this brand repeatedly. And so now let's fast forward to the most recent GOP debate.
Senator Cruz, entitlements. You've argued for raising the retirement age and reducing benefits for future retirees. But reducing any sort of benefits for the elderly has always been notoriously hard to do politically. When Speaker Paul Ryan proposed replacing traditional Medicare with federally funded plans a few years ago, a liberal group responded with a commercial that featured a granny being pushed off a cliff.
And so you see,
different this time?
Just the point of that is that you can take a brand and you can drive it for 4 years. So even 4 years after your initial push into the media cycle, here it is, national debate, millions of people watching because Donald Trump is one of the candidates. And here we've brought that ad. We've reminded people Paul Ryan wants to throw a grandmother off a cliff. Now it has shifted, though, from Paul Ryan to Ted Cruz. Do you want to throw grandmothers off of a cliff? You know, Republicans writ large, what are your plans for Medicare? And is that anything that's going to be of or like throwing a grandmother off a cliff? So we've taken this brand and driven it for a while, and we'll continue to drive it for as long as it's useful. So that's one example. The ad was $2,500. Okay? So this was not a $10 million media buy. This was a cleverly produced, the right message at the right time with the right elements put together, and that in that moment, because of that combination of factors, we were able to get a lot of coverage in the news and drive that message into households at a level far beyond what we had the resources to support through a paid media buy. Let's look at another example. Who remembers the Ebola crisis? You know, what year is it, 2015? So 2014? I guess this was last year. If you remember that whole month leading up to the election, it was just nothing but Ebola, Ebola, Ebola. You know, of course, surprisingly enough, 2 seconds after the election's over, nobody's ever heard of Ebola again. But during that period of time leading up to the election, Ebola was so prevalent. And so we put out this ad.
Washington actually can cut spending.
The CDC says its discretionary funding has been cut by $585 million since 2010.
Cut. Less government.
Cut.
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 Our budget has been flat since 2003. Responding to an emerging infectious disease threat, this is particularly damaging.
Cut.
Cut. That was the left hook.
Cut. Cut.
The right cross was the sequestration.
Cut. Cut.
The NIH saw its budget slashed by $446
million.
Cut.
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 There are outbreaks happening today that we're not able to recognize, stop, or prevent as effectively as we should be able to.
Cut.
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 Make a cut. Okay, so pretty graphic ad, right? We put it out right in the middle of the Ebola crisis. Let's see what happens.
Today, a liberal PAC called the Agenda Project released an ad. The ad is about Ebola. It essentially blames Republicans in Washington for cutting the parts of government that we're now counting on to fight against Ebola. As ads go, this is pretty brutal.
This is unbelievable. This is absolutely outrageous. Just outrageous.
Republican cuts kill. Well, that ad brought to you by the nonprofit group Agenda Project.
With just 3 weeks to go until the critical midterm elections, there is a new ad from a progressive political action group that pretty much blames the Republicans for the Ebola outbreak.
Announcing Republican cuts kill. The ad features a montage of Republican lawmakers.
Liberals are now even blaming the deadly Ebola scare on Republican spending cuts.
The Agenda Project has a new ad out about this. Here it is.
One independent liberal group released an ad criticizing Republicans for cutting spending that they say could have led to an Ebola vaccination. Scott, that ad is titled Republican Cuts Kill, which shows just how tough the political battle over Ebola has become.
Damn, I'm not sure. In my entire life, I've ever seen a Democratic ad that aggressive.
So here again, you see we put an investment into a very aggressive message. We timed it right. We promoted it correctly. And then we have the media itself to pick up that message of, you know, did Republican budget cuts lead to the Ebola crisis? And we have put in there people who are nonpartisan parts. I mean, the head of the CDC is certainly not partisan, you know, saying that these budget cuts were very problematic in us trying to deal with this Ebola crisis. And then, as everybody knows, the Republicans are just consistently and aggressively arguing for cut, cut, cut the government, cut, cut, cut the government. So we tried to put those two facts together to just begin to encourage Americans to question, is every single budget cut good? Is it necessarily something that we want to promote willy-nilly across, let's just cut everything? Because sometimes those cuts have very real consequences. And here was a case where leading officials in the health department, the Center for Disease Control, et cetera, in the government said, these really hurt our ability to deal with these crises. So we wanted to bring that message forward and bring it pretty hard. And so that's a piece of what we do, which is attacking on one side, you know, trying to promote our values in a way that will get the kind of resonance within the media cycle that we want to see, so that more and more people can begin to just have those conversations internally, you know, around the coffee table, and that when they engage in politics, they don't stay at a rhetoric level, but they really try to take that, you know, the aggressive advertising, the aggressive marketing, but then take that and begin to have real conversations with themselves and their legislators. What are we cutting? Why are we cutting? How are we cutting? What are we doing about Medicare? What is our obligation to our seniors? How are we going to fund that? That kind of thing. So these are bombs thrown. I mean, they're bombs, right? But they're bombs thrown in service to what we hope will be ultimately a productive conversation. Because as I said in the beginning, I do think that there are a lot of shared values that Americans have. And certainly, you know, no American wants to cut the budget so much that we've got problems with diseases like Ebola. Nobody wants to see grandmothers get thrown off a cliff. So let's make sure that we bring some messages and bring them very aggressively so that then we can facilitate those conversations happening.
You're listening to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. Erica Payne is a political strategist and founder of the Agenda Project, a public policy advocacy organization that works to affect political dialogue and shape the political debate using provocative media campaigns on behalf of progressive causes. We'll be right back. This is the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour. I'm Ross Chambliss. Today we're airing a talk given recently by Erica Payne. She's the founder of the Agenda Project. She spoke about her work to influence national political debate over issues such as cutting Medicaid and raising the minimum wage.
Now, another example of this, but one that has, I think, a much more aspirational tone to it, is a project that I worked on starting 5 years ago during the lame duck session of Congress in 2010. The Republicans were demanding an extension of the Bush tax cuts for even the highest earners. And the Obama administration was going to cave to that demand for whatever reason. I don't know. I don't actually know why they were going to cave to it, but they were going to. And so the American political establishment in 2010, with the deficits where they were, the funding that we needed for other parts of the government, they said, well, you know, whatever, we're going to keep on giving these tax cuts to incomes over $1 million a year. Well, I thought that was ridiculous, and a bunch of millionaires that I know also thought it was ridiculous. And so together we crafted a letter that said, Dear President Obama, Mitch McConnell, Harry Reid, please raise our taxes for the good of the country. We got about 40 people to sign that initial letter, put it on a website for a few $100s, and faxed out a press release saying, you know, several dozen millionaires would like their taxes raised. That's not something you hear every day. And so that, again, really exploded into the media. And let me show you what's happened. The Patriotic Millionaires started with that in 2010, arguing for higher taxes on millionaires. In the following years since then, they aggressively lobbied Congress. They've been on multiple television outlets arguing for greater tax obligations for millionaires. They've turned their attention to raising the minimum wage, believing that $7.25 an hour federal minimum wage in the richest country in the world is both immoral and economically unsustainable. And they've most recently put out a volume that knits together a couple of different concepts. One is this idea of political inequality. So what's happening when millionaires have so much political power, more than regular people? So all of that political power, a cadre of millionaires, not the ones that I'll show you are engaged in our efforts, but cadre of millionaires and corporate lobbyists are using their political power to get more money and using that more money to gain more political power. And the net result of those two things is a country that is increasingly less of a democracy than it should be, a tax code that is riddled with loopholes and carve-outs and giveaways to the people who least need them with no economically justifiable reason for doing it, and a situation where hardworking Americans are trying to get by on $7.25, $8, $8.50 an hour, which no rational person could believe that someone could live on that, and it's eroding the basis of our economy, which is consumer demand. The extent to which the American political system is stuck and that the legislators in Washington are not able to move forward and build policy together, the Patriotic Millionaires felt it was important to put out a more holistic view of what they'd like to see in the future in the country. So this volume is meant to do that. It's called Renegotiating Power and Money in America, and it lays out three very simple premises. One, that regular people should have the same amount of political power that millionaires and billionaires have. We did write a constitution that tried to incorporate that, but it seems like we've got some challenges to it, so they wanted to reassert that first principle. Second, if somebody works full-time, they should be able to support themselves. Again, that seems like a no-brainer, but it's certainly not the case right now. And third is that there are some things, as one of our Patriotic Millionaires said, there are things we want to do as a society. They're not free. And so the third piece of the Patriotic Millionaires suggested governing philosophy number three is, when you look at what we need to fund as a country have a greater percentage of that come from millionaires and corporations. Those three tenets are widely shared by a bipartisan majority of Americans, so both the majority of Republicans and the majority of Democrats agree with those three central premises. The Patriotic Millionaires have put them out in, I think, a really accessible conversational book to try to start the conversation of as many differences as we have. We do largely agree as a country on these three things. Can we at least make some forward progress on these three things that Democrats and Republicans and independents, you know, across states and in all kinds of different areas of America agree with? So let's look at what happened when you have the right 35 or 40 people sign a letter that says something as unusual as, please raise my taxes. Let's look at that.
I have to tell you, I think our economy seems based on the theory that as the rich get richer, Hasan Minhaj files this report.
I'm asking for fair taxes where those who have more pay more, those who have less pay less.
What?
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the Patriotic Millionaires.
A coalition called the Patriotic Millionaires for Fiscal Strength, they say, go ahead and tax me, I'm rich.
The U.S. government's not a charity. It's how we work together to accomplish national aims.
Tonight, we hear from a group that wants higher taxes on itself. They call themselves Patriotic Millionaires for Fiscal Strength, and members were on Capitol Hill lobbying today.
We had a group called the Patriotic Millionaires who was there.
There is a group out there called Patriotic Millionaires.
Why, in your view, is paying taxes patriotic?
There are things that we want to do as a society. They're not free.
The problem is that we have structured an economy and a society that asymmetrically benefits people like me.
The idea that lower tax rates lead to higher growth is invalidated by what happened within the last decade.
Patriotic millionaires, people who are willing and ready to pay more in taxes.
Every time I get a tax cut, I get richer. I don't put money back into the economy, I just get richer.
One group is telling Congress the unthinkable. They are ready to pay more.
Solving this problem involves some higher taxes for some Americans.
I think it's only fair to ask the wealthiest Americans to do their share.
So Jeff and his patriotic millionaire friends have come forward and just said, you know what, we all need to dig in a little bit and help our country through this period of time.
Both of you gentlemen are willing to put your money where your mouth is.
What I want is a system where there's more justice and fairness for my family and I to live in.
Rich people are not the cause of a robust economy. They're the result of a robust economy.
There you go. And so I guess most recently they were on Capitol Hill last week meeting with a bunch of lawmakers around issues in the tax code that unfairly benefit millionaires and corporations, and also around raising the minimum wage and trying to bring more democracy to the country. They were just on the PBS NewsHour. And so anyway, you can see what can happen when you put the right messengers together with the right messages, and when you try to, you know, aggressively amplify your value system into the American media cycle to share that set of values with a group outside just the confines of people you might be able to talk to in moments where the media is covering something related to what it is that you think people should be considering at that moment. So those are three examples, and I'll just finish there and open it up for questions or thoughts.
So don't you think that anything that has to do with lowering the influence of the super rich lobbyists, et cetera, would have to deal with campaign finance as well as what's being talked about?
Oh, yes, 100%. I mean, there are a combination of things that are working in tandem with one another to make our political process less democratic. One of those, and the biggest elephant in the room, is the money in politics with the Citizens United decision by the Supreme Court, I'm assuming you're familiar with that, and then the funding of campaigns. So there's no doubt about that. I play a lot of chess though. And so I think one of the things that you learn in chess is that if somebody attacks a piece of yours, you can either move your piece, defend it, or attack a piece of theirs of greater value. The problem of money in politics has to be addressed. One way that would help to mitigate that is if more people voted, and if the voting portion of the Democratic algebra equation, so to speak, you could make progress in that too. You could make progress if you didn't have congressional districts drawn in the way they are. So 100%. I mean, this money in politics is absolutely completely preposterous. We have to attack it from a bunch of different sides, though, because until we get a new Supreme Court who's going to overcome that decision, we have to make progress on other fronts.
Hi, my name is Hans. Thanks for coming today. I found this very enlightening. I was just wondering, so what differentiates your political group from other political groups in being able to like create and dispense such widespread ads using so little money? Because like you said, you compared it to like a $10 million political ad. And so
yeah.
I know you guys are dispensing it at the right place in the right time, but what sources are you using?
I mean, really not anything that remarkable. That's what's so insane about it. I mean, and this is just, maybe this is the best thing that I can leave y'all with is, you know, young people who want to engage, I hope, in your governance, that I think living your values very aggressively can resonate. I mean, these ads didn't resonate because we put tons of money behind them. They resonated because people understand that there's a grain of truth in them. And of course, they're exaggerated, right? But there is truth underneath them that is resonant with people, which is why they get shared on social media, which is why they hit people's nerves, which is why conservatives react so badly to them.
I think.
And then be creative and present stuff in a way that is engaging. I mean, the Granny Off the Cliff ad, I personally think it's funny. Like, every time I watch it, I giggle because there's this, they're not going to do it. Are they really going to do it? You're waiting to see if they were actually going to go all the way to throwing the grandmother off the cliff. And there are a couple of little pieces of that from a storytelling point of view are deliberate choices. And this is maybe something more you would learn in film school instead of in political science school. But storytelling is storytelling. And if you tell an effective story, whether that's through a visual medium, a video medium, or a blog post, a good story is a good story. One of the reasons I think the Granny Off the Cliff ad works is because we decided to actually show the body falling, but it's a mannequin, and it's so obviously a mannequin. I mean, she's this stiff-armed old lady, you know, falls down. And so it kind of has a humor underneath it. The Ebola, the Republican cuts kill, it. I don't know what it is, but that cut, 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 cut. There's a rhythm to that that I think just gets at the viewer a little bit. It pulls them in. And then in that editorial choice, doing the five visuals at the end, one of which has that person with blood running down their face, we did a small paid buy for that one, a very small paid buy, and we had a television station reject the ad because they said it was too graphic. But to me, we needed that graphic, and we were willing to go there because we felt 100% justified in the story that we were telling. And then the Patriotic Millionaires one, you know, I mean, there's a lighthearted an aspirational element to the Patriotic Millionaires story, and that's just interesting. I mean, a bunch of rich people coming out saying they want to pay higher taxes. Who on God's green earth wants to pay higher taxes? And the thing is, we currently have a situation where presidential candidates feel free to tell everybody that they pay as little in taxes as is humanly possible. No, I wouldn't hire a CEO to run my company who refused to invest in my company. So I don't understand how that works in people's minds anyway, that they would vote for somebody who brags about how little they pay in taxes. But certainly a bunch of wealthy people coming out and demanding to pay higher taxes is of note. So when you're telling the story, who the storyteller is a really important element.
You're listening to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. We'll be right back. This is the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. I'm Ross Chambliss. Today we're broadcasting a talk given recently by Erica Payne. She is a political strategist and the founder of the Agenda Project. Her organization has worked to stir up public distaste for Republican conservative ideas in Congress by creating provocative and sometimes graphic political attack ads in order to get news media to change the direction of the debate. Erica Payne is also the chief strategist for the Patriotic Millionaires, a group of wealthy Americans who support higher taxes on the rich and raising the minimum wage. She answered questions from University of Utah students.
Hi, I'm Kissy. I'm wondering how young people our age can contribute to the kind of media disruption that you're doing right now, because I know that what is talked about in the media really affects politics, and when it's just the same narrative over and over and over again, there's no differing opinions. So how can we contribute to that disruption?
It's such a big question. Can you be more specific? Like, what do you want to accomplish?
I guess I'm just wondering if there's anything that individual citizens can do to kind of change the narrative in the media, like the kind of things that you were displaying today. Obviously we're not like public affairs experts.
Right.
But is there anything that individuals can do to kind of contribute to this type of political effort?
Here's the thing. So yes, I have a 20-year career. And at this point, you know, when you work in politics, it's an industry like any other thing is an industry. So you get to know people and you can, you know, pull different experts in and things like that when you need to. These videos and these efforts were widely criticized, not the Patriotic Millionaires, but the Ebola and the granny off the cliff. Every establishment Democratic person who I've known for my 20-year career emailed me and told me, are you kidding me? This is the worst strategy on the planet. And I said, well, I don't really care, you know, because that's what's going on and I'm going to tell the truth about it. And so here we go. And so, I think that what you all should do is not look at it as, you know, how can I also disrupt the media or disrupt the narrative? But what do you really care passionately about, you know, and how can you tell a story to an increasingly large group of people about what you really care about? Look at Black Lives Matter. You know, I just had them speak at a breakfast that I did in New York. That started as a group of people who were all on a Twitter. They all know each other, but they started a hashtag, Black Lives Matter, and they had some discussions about the fact that they needed to amplify these issues with policing and stuff, but that came from a place of deep passion and truth. And so I would say pick the thing that you're most passionate about, learn more about it, and then find ways to tell that story in a compelling way, because you will break through. This is the thing. You don't have to wait for 20 years. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Do you know how much student debt you guys have? Mm-hmm. You have $1 trillion of student debt. People your age are drowning. You all are putting off getting married, having babies, buying houses. There are people your age. I don't even know how you do it. You know, when I went to college, it was $500 a semester, and I went to Chapel Hill, right? That's a good school. It's $500 a semester. My sorority bill was higher than my tuition bill, you know? And y'all are not in that situation. And the thing is, you also don't vote. So who on God's green earth is going to listen to you if you do not vote? You know? And so the thing that I would suggest that maybe is nearest and dearest that you all should be speaking out about is, how do we have an economy that is structured in such a way that you have to have a higher education? You cannot survive on a high school education in this country, in this global environment. So if definitionally you must go to college, if definitionally our society can only further itself if you all go to college and educate yourselves, why is it 50 grand a year? Why are you walking out of school with 200 grand in debt? and go sit in your nation's, in your state capital until you make a change, because you can do it. I mean, if every single person in this room, you know, if we finished up early and y'all had a little strategy session and decided we're not going to take this anymore, every single one of y'all knows five people. Every single one of those five people knows five people. And all of y'all should be at the state capitol on Monday morning at 9 a.m. and say, do a tuition boycott. Don't pay your tuition. I'm sorry, the administrators are going to be so mad. But, I mean, seriously, you can do things. I would just say don't look at it as, oh, I want to disrupt the narrative, because screw the narrative. I mean, whatever, you know, the narrative. Find the thing that you care passionately about. Find other people who care passionately about it and tell your stories in ways that are compelling. That is how you make change. A guy that our communications director was at Normal for 7 years, it's the National Organization to Reform Marijuana Laws, he came at it from just a criminal justice point of view. Like, we are locking up people for, I don't want to get into big pot debate, but, you know, I mean, from his point of view, we were locking up people for having what's in essence having a beer, and why is it legal here and it's not legal, you know, blah, blah, blah. He spent 7 years. Do you know where pot legalization was 7 years ago? Nowhere. Look where it is today. What did he do? You know, he started interning with a very small organization when he was in college. He learned how to do web development. He brought those skills to bear on that organization. He met people who needed medical marijuana. He started taking those people in to see congresspeople. And here's the crazy thing. If you call your congressperson, they kind of have to meet with you. They will meet with you. If y'all call your congresspeople and you say, I'm from Utah, I live in your district, and I'm bringing 20 students to your office, they have to meet with you. So go do that. I mean, for real. Like, go do it. Y'all's student debt thing is preposterous. You know, what other things do y'all care about? Like, what keeps you up at night? Girls. No, I mean, dating. I don't know. You know, other stuff too. But then there's this whole thing about life that you all have to walk into, an economy that doesn't have jobs for you. And people are making those choices. People are cutting funding to higher education so that you have to pay higher tuition. People are not recognizing and making legislative changes. They could pay, our government could pay for all of y'all to go to school for free for 4 years. It's just a choice that we're making that we don't do that. And we have to understand that it's choices, and lawmakers need to understand it as choices. And you can make them make different choices.
Hi, my name is Maria. I just want to add a little bit to that. I'm from a third world country. My country is Costa Rica. And my tuition in my country for a high education for one semester was $12. If a third world country can do it, I don't understand why anyone here in the United States pays as much as they do and send their kids to school and have to afford a house and have to repair cars and have to pay insurance company. I was insured by my government. I pay my taxes. I got college education for $12 a semester. Higher education, like professors from Europe will be teaching me. I had professors from Brazil teaching me Portuguese. So it was not like the education was cheap, so the quality was cheap.
Right.
Not like that. I went to France with a scholarship and get better my French and got paid by the French government. And here I sat for 5 years thinking if this was worth it, because I refused to pay this much money for education. But I had no choice in order to embrace again my career and show schools that I can teach, that I'm valuable. Though I have teach higher education in Costa Rica and France, in Europe, here, if I don't get this paper that I have to pay for, I don't even have to prove that I have the knowledge. I am paying.
Right. That's the thing. You're paying for a stamp in the middle of your forehead. You're not paying for the education. And this is the thing. Y'all can change this. And the thing is, you're walking into a presidential election year. You know, everybody this election year wants to know what students think, because people are already buzzing about the student debt and the student, you know, you all could organize here and begin to branch out from there. I mean, organize a boycott to take place whenever tuition checks are due, September 1st, first day of classes. You know, start an online something or other, spread it through social media, you know, get people to take the pledge that they're not going to send their tuition check in. When that happens, and then call me, I'll help you with your press strategy. You know, when that happens, September 1st of a presidential election year, believe me, people are going to take notice, and you'll begin to make the steps towards progress.
Hi, my name is Maria, and I'm just kind of wondering how we can realistically engage in what you're talking about, even with the fear of backlash, especially in a system that's really focused on networking and not offending anyone and being really politically correct all the time.
This is what people don't understand about power dynamics. They do not pay attention to you when you are quiet. Y'all are currently being completely and utterly screwed. You've already had, you're living the backlash. The backlash is your tuition bill, right? You're living that every day. What other backlash is going to be a problem? It doesn't matter. And the thing is, as you get more powerful, put it on your resume. Organized a boycott of 200 people, blah, blah, blah. That shows leadership. Goldman Sachs, where I worked at the summer in between my business school years, it ain't exactly a radical place. You know, I went in there with my political background and all the trouble I've caused in my life, and they thought, well, she's a self-starter. I mean, they do recognize that. That's entrepreneurialism, you know? They just want to channel it to make them some more money. You're not going to get in any trouble. I mean, maybe clear it with your parents, you know? But even then, what do they know, right? They're old. I mean, they didn't have to deal with what you have to deal with. You know, so don't worry about making noise. Noisemakers have more interesting lives and actually make things happen. They have richer, fuller, better lives. Don't worry about the backlash.
Oh, Katie Guido. So I was just curious, how can we be able to have an impact in the presidential election? Because the only states that matter are Florida and Ohio. This state is going to vote Republican.
I think that that what you want to do is influence the presidential debate.
Okay.
And that's a different thing. I hear you, you know, because I live in Washington, you know, so it doesn't matter. I've lived in a million places where my vote doesn't count. But what you're trying to do is to influence the national conversation around that. And I say that, I mean, that's the word that people use. You're trying to influence the media cycle so that the politicians are forced to respond to it. And the other thing is, if you look at the political system as a whole, people don't just take into account who political commentators who are who drives this media coverage. They don't just take into account who won up here. They're looking at what happens on every single down ballot race. So if you're watching this stuff about Trump, the Republican establishment is freaking out that if Trump's the presidential candidate, it's going to have reverberations all the way down ticket where there could be a sweep and they even, you know, if they probably wouldn't get as far as losing the House, but they could certainly lose the Senate, lose several seats in the House. And so you can affect things down ballot, which is easier to do locally, and that reverberates up into the national media coverage around issues like this. Students show force in, you know, blah, 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 elections. So you don't have to change who gets the top job, but you need to affect who's getting the jobs down there, which you all can do. And then stuff like these media things, you know, I mean, some kind of event 2 months before the presidential election cycle, it's already bubbling. This is the thing about the media cycle when you're trying to affect that is, The analogy that I use when I think about it is it's like a master surfer. You're watching the horizon for the swells. You know, you can see within the media things that they're beginning to cover and things as they bubble up. And so then what you want to do is hit the moment right with the right messenger, you know, the right surfer-surfboard combination, and then you can ride the natural momentum of the media cycle. This student loan thing is already getting a lot of attention. So all y'all, and you have 12 months, You know, all the students of America actually need to do is to ride that wave, which you could do, I mean, actually kind of easily. You just have to actually do something. You know, you can't sit around and, like, gripe about the fact that you're, that you don't have any power. Because I don't think y'all aren't using your power. I don't think. I didn't mean that y'all personally. Y'all might be using your power tons and tons. American students are not using the power they have. They have an enormous amount of power, and they have an enormous amount of media power right now because the story has already started. That's my point. Do you see what I'm saying? All right. Thanks, and I'll just tell you www.agendaproject.org. That's our edgy attack kind of stuff. The Patriotic Millionaires are a separate organization. I just work as chief strategist for both of them. The Patriotic Millionaires are patrioticmillionaires.org. You can go on there and learn more about those groups and sign up to be a friend of the Agenda Project or a friend of the Patriotic Millionaires. And because we'll actually, we just did an ad about student debt against Governor Walker under the Agenda Project. And so it's an issue that we will be working on more over the course of the next year. You know, so connect with us.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, y'all.
If you'll all join me in thanking Ms. Erica Payne.
And that's Erica Payne. She's the founder of the Agenda Project, a liberal progressive organization that works to change the political debate in the media by running provocative political attack ads. You can find links to some of the ads that played during her talk on our website, kcpw.org, under the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour tab. This program is made possible in part by the Hinckley Institute's Wayne Owens Fund. I'm Ross Chambliss, your curator and host. Thanks for listening.